You're listening to WRFG Atlanta. The time is 6 o'clock. John Falstaff halfway through the Celtic show, and we need to tell you what we just listened to. We started off with a track from Mr. Hugh Morrison by a track associated with Robert Burns called Leezy Lindsay, and we'll be hearing that very same tune with different words when the next piece of music comes up. Then we had Anthem for Ireland from Dead Donnan featuring Dolores Kane, and that's from an album recorded way back in 1985, I believe, on the Dara label. The album's called Anthem, and you may have recognised the tune, the Derry Air, also used for Danny Boy. And we finished up with a four-minute history of Ireland from Tommy Sands with his daughter Moya from the album Tommy put out recently called Arising from the Troubles. Song of Erin is the name of that. Well, as promised, we have a special for you now, some special guests in the studio. We're delighted to welcome Jim Gaffey of the Gaffey Group and Dr. Geraldine Higgins, Director of Irish Studies at Emory University. We're going to be talking about three things, finishing up with the 100th anniversary of the launch of the Titanic. But we're going to start with another, well, it's not a boat, but QE2. Queen Elizabeth II and Prince Philip came to Ireland for 4 days a couple of weeks ago in May. And curiously, I didn't hear this commented on, that Prince Philip is a member of the Greek and Danish royal family and considers himself to be a Dane, first and foremost, believe it or not. So you could say that the Danes and the English had come back to invade Ireland. But it all seemed to go off very well. Now, Geraldine, you were there, as was I.
That's right. I was happened to be in Ireland for the both visits of Queen Elizabeth and President Obama. I was travelling with a group of Emory students on a Journeys of Reconciliation programme, and we were delighted that our visit coincided with theirs. But the Queen's visit has been planned for a very long time, and a lot of credit must go to President Magaliese for her efforts to make the visit come off. And I think overwhelmingly people in Ireland were delighted at how well the visit went.
And irony is that President McAleese was born north of the border, and therefore born as the subject of and a good friend of Tommy Sands.
Well, I mean, I think it was an extraordinary couple of weeks for Ireland that these visits happened. And for the Queen, it was 100 years since any member of the royal family had been in Ireland, and it's the first...
Officially,
first royal visit since independence. And the Irish state went to extraordinary lengths to make it go very smoothly. And in fact, that meant really keeping the Queen away from the Irish population to some extent.
But the people's Republic of Cork got to meet the Queen.
They did in the English market.
The rebel county.
That's right. And just the images, I think, in some ways it's almost the images and the photographs and the sort of markers of historical importance that the Queen laid down that are almost as important as the experience of it. The fact that she was there and that she visited these very symbolic places.
So on day one she visited the Garden of Remembrance, where the 1916 leaders, who were shot of course under British rule back in 1916, are buried.
That's right. I mean, in many ways, the garden was the most important symbolic part of the visit. And really, those scenes, anyone who watched them, and again, I think it shows the importance of what wasn't said, but that minute silence that the Queen observed, because the garden has a huge plaque that says it's dedicated to all those who gave their lives for Irish freedom. And to see the British Queen stand there with her head bowed was an extraordinary image. And I think everybody was very moved to see that.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on that. You know, the Queen never bows her head in their protocol. So for her to do that almost within an hour of arriving in the Republic of Ireland for the first time in 100 years, a dramatic statement.
That's interesting about
set the tone.
About the protocol, because I also heard after the fact, but I didn't hear it commented on, that royal protocol dictates that they cannot be seen eating or drinking in public. Which explains why neither she nor Prince Philip got to sip that pint of Guinness that they were presented with at the Guinness Hub store.
Yeah. Well, at least President Obama did that.
Oh, and then some. But now, of course, that cemetery was not the only one that Queen Elizabeth visited.
That's
she
right.
also visited the cemetery in Islandbridge to the Irish soldiers who are only now, 100 years later, getting their due for having fought in the First World War.
Yeah,
that's always been a kind of a taboo subject in Ireland.
Thousands. Mm-hmm.
Oh, hundreds of thousands, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, it was really important that she went to both of those cemeteries. And in fact, because Ireland's really on the brink of a decade of commemorations, beginning next year with 1912, and that will really lead in. And I know we're going to speak a bit later about Titanic, but, you know, the sinking of the Titanic leads into the First World War. And then we have a whole decade of, you know, the Easter Rising and then the War of Independence and the treaty. So really, the Queen really set that off with laying down these markers in both locations.
Yeah, John, get off the historical context, the economic context. Ireland is going through a terrible time right now, and both the UK and Ireland have to move on very, very quickly because Europe is beginning to slide into the backwater of economic history with the BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, moving well ahead. So leaving these unsaid disappointments and disagreements behind very quickly, it will benefit Ireland in the long run. I know all of the history. I've lived it. I could just speak to Geraldine's points, probably not as well as she, but my family has lived it, and were in the British Army and in the British Navy and had that experience within the family, arguing one way or the other and all of those other things. But Ireland has to move on very, very quickly because it's going to happen in a nanosecond. Europe is going to be in trouble for the next 10 years and Ireland might be in trouble for the next 20 years.
So the Queen, of course, did get to go south. She saw the Rock of Cashel and got to meet people in the streets of Cork. And I gather that wasn't entirely planned. It was kind of ad-libbed at the last minute. So I think the security forces had relaxed enough at that point. I drove up the M9, I think it was, from Waterford to Dublin through Carlow a few days before she was down there. And I was astonished that every few hundred metres there were two guards, two policemen on the motorway. I've never seen anything like that in my life. So security was extremely high. How do you think the Cork visit went?
I think the Cork visit was a huge success, and it really, I think it I suppose in some ways it was the money gall part of the Queen's trip, you know, that she, the visit to the English market and the scenes. There's a fabulous photograph of her with a butcher laughing very heartily, and apparently the English market in Cork has even seen an increase in visitors since the Queen was there. I mean, the other really, I think, important moment was the speech at Dublin Castle.
Of course.
Where she spoke two words of Irish, she said a cardia.
But she actually, she said five.
Really well. Yes,
five. She said a hook there all along with the cordia. President and friends.
Yeah.
Friends. So and Obama got 10 in, so.
Well, he had to, didn't he?
But no, I mean, what she said there, perhaps you can explain that to folks who are not familiar.
Well, when she spoke in Dublin Castle, it was quite extraordinary because there she really talked about the shared history and said that, you know, that the two islands, England and Ireland, had shared a troubled past and that their past was not a benign one. And she expressed regret for the losses and the suffering that people had gone through. I mean, she did not go so far as to make an apology, but no one expected her to.
But she also acknowledged personal loss. Her first cousin, Lord Mountbatten,
right,
a World War II hero, you know, was blown up in Sligo by the IRA back in 79 or so. So, I mean, it affected her family too.
Yes, and I think she was really referring to that. She didn't say it directly, but
right,
she was certainly
a lot
saying,
was said indirectly.
Yes, all these things that were said in the silence.
In code. And of course, also, she went to Croke Park.
She did. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone thought Croke Park would be the most significant visit. And, you know, partly the history of Croke Park, it's an Irish stadium. It was built for the playing of Irish games. And until very recently, no English games were allowed to be played there. But, of course, we all also saw scenes when the first rugby match between Ireland and England, when God Save the Queen
was sung and nobody batted an eyelid.
Everyone stood, again, with
your listeners
great respect.
might be interested in the significance, you know, and during the revolutionary period in Ireland, there was a GAA match ongoing, and the Saracen cars or military vehicles were pulled right down the center of the field, and they opened fire on the stands, on the audience, And one of the Tipperary player was also killed, but 14 people were killed in total. And it's the original Bloody Sunday.
It is the original Bloody Sunday.
So it's total sacred ground to the Irish.
Well, my grandfather was present at the game. He was a Tipperary supporter, and he was in the crowds. And the story is that somebody near him was among the injured. But it has to be said, if we're going to mention that there was a reason why that happened. It was a response to some fairly nasty early morning raids where roughly the same number of people who were suspected of being British spies were shot
and
killed.
That was Michael Collins's squad that took out the intelligence squad, took out all of the resident British spies that were living around
the ones
city
they believed were
in about a 2.5 hour period that Sunday morning.
So it was a response
to that.
There was
a reprisal, but to open fire on
innocent people
and citizens.
Well, they surrounded Croke Park and attempted to search for arms. They were trying to see. They thought the people who had used them might be in there, and they didn't find any. But I guess somebody got trigger happy. And
well, they were the black and tans. I'm sure they just did for whatever they wanted to do. So, but it's so important to know what the significance of these things and the risk that the Queen took was remarkable herself and Prince Philip, you know, because going into that situation and the history that Geraldine has brought us through there in the 100 years, and of course coming into Croke Park, I mean, any number of things could happen. So I'm glad we're past that. We're past that part.
I mean, of course, the Bord Fáilte line on both visits is that Ireland is a place where people can relax. And I think, you know, everyone in Ireland was so thrilled to see with both visits this sense that, you know, these people could relax in
and
Ireland
they did,
and
they
could
did
anywhere
look,
else.
They did look relaxed.
They did.
Because the Queen can look kind of stiff, but she did look relaxed. But I think she got particularly relaxed in Cork. And perhaps we should go out here on a humorous note on the Queen's visit. And we're going to continue in a few moments with more conversation about President Barack Obama's visit to Ireland, which also took place just a few brief days after the Queen's. But at the Cork market, apparently, Prince Philip asked one of the fishmongers or whatever, what's in the fish cakes? And he got a Cork answer. The answer was, fish, what did you think was in there? Anyway, here's a song from a Cork man about the Queen's visit. This was actually recorded just before the visit, and I heard it on the radio over there, and I managed to acquire it for you today, and I think you will enjoy it. It's by a man called Tim O'Riordan. Tim O'Riordan, and his band is known as Natural Gas, and it's called Come Up to Garan, Lizzie Windsor. Now, Lizzie Windsor, of course, Elizabeth Windsor is the official born name of the woman who became the Queen. So, as he points out, had she come to Cork, or had she grown up in Cork, she would have been known locally as Lizzie Windsor. And this song features the Queen being invited to sample the enormous cultural diversity of the real Cork, including bowling, hurling, porter, and sulky racing. Also, of course, black pudding. And then to be ferried up to the north side suburb of Garan in an old van to savour a most superior view of the city. Now, you'll notice in here that, first of all, the tune you've heard earlier today, it's a parody, in fact, of Will You Gang to the Highlands, Lizzie Lindsay, which we played you earlier. But you need to listen very carefully at the beginning and end, because there's somebody impersonating Queen Elizabeth, who's 85, trying to get Prince Philip, who at the time was 89. I think he might have turned 90 since, to hurry up. Hope you enjoy.
Hurry up, Philip.
Kid me le Fáilte, Your Highness. Your visit has caused such a thrill. Hop into me van and I'll show you the view from the top of the hill. Won't you come up to Grand Lizzie Windsor and come up to Sweet Fallonry? Won't you come up to Grand Lizzie Windsor and look down on the banks of the Lee? That's Patrick Street there in the distance. Some chaps burnt it down long ago, but we built it back up from the rubble, 'cause we feels pride in Cork, don't you know? Ah, you love the old English market, we've trotters and tripe and dressing, pig's head and juicy black puddings, and things only fit for a queen. Won't you come up to Grand Lizzie Windsor
and come up to sweet Farinry. Won't you come up to Grand Lizzie Windsor and look down on the banks of the Lee? That's Queenstown, way off down the harbour, once named after some majesty, where we were loaded in thousands like cattle, never more the green island to see. Would you throw an old score with the bishop?
I bet.
Because bowling out past the black man, we loves hurling and football and porter, cause the Beamish and Murphy's are grand. Hey, come up to Grand Lizzie Windsor and come up to sweet Farinry. Won't you come up to Grand Lizzie Windsor and look down on the banks of the Lee? Are you up for a spot of fox hunting or a sulky spin out the straight road? Are you meeting with Cork's merchant princes? Are the people of Norfolk's the board? We does rugby, soccer and cricket, and we're not all that bad as you know. You're a chance an old pint at Tenora and come up to Mardyke for a stroll. But come up to Grand Lizzie Windsor and come up to sweet Farinry. Won't you come up to Grand Lizzie Windsor and look down on the banks of the Lee? 'Twas mighty you came for a visit.
Sure, splendid to
the
visit
next time, don't leave it so long. But come back to our beautiful city, 'cause it's time that we all got along. Come up to Grand Lizzie Windsor, ah, come up to sweet Farinry. Won't you come up to Grand Lizzie Windsor and look down on the banks of the Lee? Yes, you come up to Grand Lizzie Windsor, ah, come up to sweet Farinry.
There you go. Only a Corkman could do it that way. And that was Mr. Tim O'Riordan and Natural Gas. And if you're interested, you can find that song on YouTube. And actually, it's got a great video with it. Highly recommend it. Come up to the Grand Lizzie Windsor. Well, moving from Queen Elizabeth. Queen Elizabeth left Ireland after a four-day visit on a Friday and went back to England. Coincidentally, I went to England and came back on the Monday morning, which happened to be the very same time that President Barack Obama was coming in for what was planned to be a day and a half visit. It ended up being cut a little bit short because of volcanic ash from Iceland and the threat that he wouldn't be able to get out. So we stayed for the whole of Monday. And in fact, when I landed at Dublin Airport, I got a photograph out the window of Air Force One, which had landed about 20 minutes beforehand. He was whisked by helicopter to meet the Irish President and the Irish Prime Minister. And not long thereafter, he took a trip up to, or should I say down, to County Offaly, to the village of Moneygall, which is where one of his many ancestors came from. Falmouth Kearney, who is a maternal great-great-great-grandfather, so one of 32 of that generation from whom he is descended, and certainly that has been documented. So he's got a little bit of Irish in him, and the rain was coming down as he stepped out there, and yet he walked up and down with Michelle, the main street of the tiny village, population 300 or 400 I think normally, and swelled to a couple of thousand for the occasion, and met just about everybody in the village, popping in and out of shops and pubs and so on, and the house where his ancestor came from, and saw the original church files documenting his ancestry. Part of it. Jim.
This was an exciting visit for the Irish people and Ireland, especially at this time, you know, for the President of the United States to come into a small country that's going through an economic difficulty. It was just absolutely fantastic. I was pleased to have been invited to the White House twice and actually met and talked to him and Michelle this last March. And they were very excited about the potential of going. And then I was asked on four planning conference calls. And it was very exciting to go through these different the planning and to listen to what they were doing, asking advice, who they should have on the stage, what it should look like. I wasn't the only one for sure. And but it was very exciting to actually see it come about, to actually see it happen. It's a pretty busy fella. For him to even spend 24 hours there was a good thing for Ireland.
And certainly Guinness came out ahead again. I mean, the Queen sat there with a long face in front of her pint, and Prince Philip apparently was dying to have it but wasn't allowed by royal protocol. This was not an issue for President Obama. I saw him live on television downing that pint in record time, and later the White House released a fascinating photograph of Michelle Obama pouring pints of Guinness for various patrons in there. I don't think Jackie Kennedy and JFK did that back in 63.
Well, Ireland will make you relax. It has that way on people. And I was glad to see them there and to see them in a small town in Ireland.
And they really did look astonishingly relaxed. I mean, the body language in the video and photographs, it's amazing.
You can tell.
Well, Maureen Dowd was there from the
I saw her interviewed.
Yes, and she was commenting on the visit, and the word that kept coming up was that Obama is always seen as too professorial, which in they seem to think was a negative thing.
I know. What can you do?
I can't see that, but apparently this idea that he's aloof and that he can't connect to people was really completely blown away by the Irish visit, and I think that was really what both sides wanted to convey from it, particularly that the scenes in Moneygall were like Ireland 50 years ago.
Right.
It was people being incredibly honest and sincere in their incredible excitement at seeing the president, and I think he really responded to that. It was just extraordinary to see those scenes.
You know, just after his election, his the polls in Ireland had him at 96% approval rating, so he was going to his crowd, and so I'm sure it's running well above 100, if that's possible now. I mean, it was just a tremendous impact. I deal with some of the tourism people, and there's a tremendous uptick because of these two visits, both the Queen's visit that was so successful. Everybody wants to go to Cork now, and then everybody wants to go to Moneygall or get out into the country, which a lot of people don't do. I'm happy about the whole thing.
Now, he did get to meet an eighth cousin of his.
Henry the Eighth.
Called Henry, and somebody, of course, had to dub him Henry the Eighth. Uh-huh. An eighth cousin is not the closest of relatives, when you consider that Jimmy Carter and Richard Nixon are sixth cousins. I suppose that's the best they could do. So now, he moved back down to Dublin, and we weren't told, but obviously a decision was made that he would, in fact, leave before the state dinner, whatever was supposed to happen that evening. But I think he probably knew early in the day, because he spent so much time on the street in Moneygall, and when he came out of the pub in the rain, he went back and shook the hands, as did Michelle, and kissed babies, and talked to somebody's mother on their mobile phone. It was extraordinary. The amount of quality time he spent on the streets seemed to me to be a reflection of a couple of things. He was really enjoying himself. And perhaps he knew that if he did a really good job there, people would let him off the hook when he bailed a little earlier and left.
They must have been whispering to him, saying this isn't going.
Well, I think the Secret Service were whispering. They were not happy. They did not look. They had never seen him cut loose like this for so long.
Yeah.
And I think they were a little nervous. They relaxed as time went by because everything was under control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I go to Dublin, often I stay at the Marion, mm-hmm. and that's where he was supposed to stay that night.
That's right.
And they're very disappointed. Peter McCann.
Somebody had to make a bed for him very fast at the British ambassador's the American ambassador's residence in London, because he arrived there early.
Yeah,
and he couldn't stay at the palace that night.
I think we should spend a little time talking about the crowd in Dublin, mm-hmm. and that with the sensational show that was put on, mm-hmm. and then the. They brought out the sports heroes of Ireland,
right.
and I'm big into GAA football, mm-hmm. and my dad was a hurling player. I have his hurley. For them to bring out the Irish sports officials, sports heroes first.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, only two or three days before that, Ireland won the Heineken Cup,
mm-hmm.
and Brian O'Driscoll, the captain, and by the way, picked as the best in the world in rugby, is the number one player.
Mm-hmm.
He carried the Heineken Cup out onto the stage, and the streets just went absolutely mad.
Well, sports and arts.
And
Stephen
arts,
Reeve is there, some other big names.
Gabriel Byrne, who's the Irish ambassador for culture.
Right.
Yeah. It was an astonishing showing, as you say, for all these different arenas. I mean, obviously, I think the economic boom was very foremost in everybody's mind. I mean, the joke was when someone said, with these two visits, you know, who's running the country? It's like, oh, the IMF. So there's this sense that this was very much about bringing attention to Ireland's economy and hoping it would help. But, you know, Ireland's been described as the world's smallest cultural superpower.
Indeed.
And it really came across in the references that Obama made and the way in which his speech, which was, I think, a masterful speech and delivered with just extraordinary passion, in a way that we've seen him do in America, but we haven't, you know, we don't see him really give himself over to that so often.
And of course, one of the points he brought up was a connection going back 160 years between Black America and Ireland.
Yes, Frederick Douglass, going over, being chased around this country and put in bad situations where he was completely accepted openly by Donald O'Connell and the Irish people, and he spoke in many parts of the country.
He spent 4 months, I believe, in Ireland, and back in the 1846,
just
before the famine hit big.
In fact, the visit I was on with the Journeys program, we began in Glasnevin Cemetery and we visited O'Connell's tomb.
Yes.
And we had a wonderful guide in Glasnevin who said they were really hoping that President Obama would come to pay homage to O'Connell's tomb, because O'Connell was really a lone voice in the 1840s, saying to Irish America, you can no longer call yourselves Irish if you uphold slavery. And it was certainly a connection that Obama wanted to make and to really draw those things together. But I think he handled the Irish side of things really well. I mean, he made his joke about how useful it would have been to have known that he was Irish when he was running in Chicago.
Right. Well, he's been making that joke for about 2 years,
He has. But I think
it's
still funny. And it's also, you know, he's not claiming to be Irish. The Irish wanted him to claim his Irishness, but he's not making any extraordinary claims. He's just, I think he told the story of Paul McCartney really well, that this was the story of every immigrant to America, taking a suitcase, getting on the boat and not knowing when you'd ever see home again. And that's not an Irish story. It's a story of everyone who came to America.
You know, for your listeners, so they could understand why the Irish would identify civil rights, slavery. Under Cromwell, 160,000 Irish people were sold into slavery into the Caribbean.
Right.
To work the sugar farms, plantations.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, if you go down to Montserrat, the flag has the Irish harp on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a close identity.
And Montserrat is one of only two countries in the world that celebrates St. Patrick's Day as a national holiday.
There is a deep affinity that has also kind of gotten lost in our political minutiae. But those that know it, can identify with it, and
Well, it will be interesting to see if the Obamas go back, because what was not commented on during the visit but has been mentioned since is that all of the Obamas have Irish ancestors. Michelle has a documented slave owner ancestor who was Irish.
Right.
So I wonder what was going through her head as he was getting all the attention for having Irish connections. Now, the Merion Hotel actually did come in very useful, because he did check in there earlier in the day and he discovered that one of the girls on the desk was from Offaly, and he took her aside and he had a lesson for 20 minutes in how to pronounce the three magic words that made the headlines of the papers we have here, because he translated "yes, we can" into "it's Faitherling," which is the Irish for "we can," and that was part of his speech. It was predicted ahead of time, because they were selling T-shirts with that on it 2 months before the visit. So maybe somebody gave him a T-shirt and he thought, I better learn how to pronounce this. But that certainly went down a treat. I mean, the Queen, you know, started one of her speeches with words in Irish, and Obama finished, his with some words in Irish. And
I think I'd like to just say one quick word about Garrett Fitzgerald.
Absolutely.
And his passing.
Yes, indeed.
Literally, as the Queen landed, of course, Garrett Fitzgerald and his work when he was Taoiseach or Prime Minister, you know, the Anglo-Irish Agreement, which actually put Northern Ireland on a path that was very difficult to get off, and that was 1985. And for him to pass just as the Queen came and then the Obama came, you talk about a busy group of people that had to have a state funeral.
On the Sunday. They had to squeeze it in between the two. Saturday was condolences and Sunday was the state funeral. They couldn't he would have got overshadowed by Obama. Gareth Fitzgerald was hugely important Irish Prime Minister who, if you look back at politicians, people don't have the most favourable opinion of the last several Prime Ministers of Ireland, with one exception. Everybody loved Gareth. He was an economist. He was a university man. He was a smart man. But he also had the common touch, and what he did was just incomparable.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to know the Fitzgerald family, particularly his son, Mark. You know,
is that the economist? He has a son who's an economist.
No, that's the other son. Okay. Mark is into real estate and things like that.
Well, when we come back, we are going to talk about the Titanic. But in the meantime, we're going to take a listen to a piece of music. Now, you might have heard of a song that came out 2 years ago by the Corrigan Brothers called Nobody's More Irish Than Barack Obama, or something along those lines. One of the Black family, I think it's Shay Black, who lives and tours in California, has come up with some new verses, and it's doing the rounds here in the US. But the Corrigan Brothers shot a video, and it's on YouTube, and we're going to play the audio from it now. And it's a song called Welcome Home, President Barack Obama. Obama, of course, with the apostrophe. And this is all about the Moneygall visit, so I hope you enjoy.
Month of May in Moneygall town, a historic day to his great 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 grandfather's home. The president's back among his own. The Obama set dancers will put on a show in Ollie Hayes bar. The Guinness will flow, and Megan Smolenyak and Stephen Neal, the president's ancestry, they will reveal. O'Leary, O'Reilly, O'Hare and O'Hara, welcome home, President Barack Obama. The president's cousin, Henry Healy, will be telling all stories like a Shanachy about Fulmouth Kearney. He'll tell them all, the finest shoemaker to leave Moneygall. From Allen to Mizzen, out in Connemara, they'll be welcoming President Barack Obama. Turlough, 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 welcome home, President Barack Obama. They say he's a great man to sing an old song. He holds a great tune, and it won't be long. He'll step up on the stage, just wait and see, and he'll sing There's No One As Irish As Me. Turlough, 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 turlough-lama, welcome home, President Barack Obama. Turlough, 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 turlough-lama, welcome home, President Barack Obama. Turlough, 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 turlough-lama, welcome home, President Barack Obama. O'Leary, O'Reilly, O'Hare and O'Hara, welcome home, President Barack Obama.
Irish-American dignitary. Glanced down at Shannon from the skyway with his attendant clergy. Stayed night in Dublin, but whole day with us to find his father's cot, now dust and rubble. Bless new church, school buildings at Lantwort, drive to Spangle Hill and cut first sod, hear, answer, find speeches, accept a learned gown, freedom of ancient city. So many kissing his ring, God love him, almost missed the waiting liner. That day in Cork had scarcely time for knife and fork.
Well, that wasn't about either Queen Elizabeth II or President Obama, but it was timely in a certain sense. That was a poem read by the poet Austin Clark, a recording from the 1960s, and it's called Irish American Dignitary. And I kind of just mentioned a lot of things there I thought were relevant. Actually, Obama, before we move on to the Titanic, did mention some Irish poets, did he not, Geraldine?
He did. One of the things I work on is our politicians who quote W.B. Yeats, and I've had a lot of fun tracking the number of politicians who quote Yeats, including Bill Clinton and John Hume and various politicians, David Trimble also, and I was listening to the Obama speech hoping that he would quote Yeats, and he didn't disappoint me. He said, "In dreams begin responsibilities." Which is also a quote that Bill Clinton used when he visited Ireland during the peace process. So I'm very happy to hear some poetry being linked to Obama and to the next topic as well.
Well, it's funny because Queen Elizabeth II was the first ruling monarch of the UK to visit Ireland since exactly 1911. 1911 is a year which is becoming well known in Ireland because Ireland is the only country to have put up its 1911 census free on the web for everybody to trace their ancestors. So everybody's busily doing that. But coincidentally, this very week is the 100th anniversary of the launch, not the first sailing, but the launch of the Titanic. And where was it built?
The Titanic was built in Belfast in the Harland and Wolff shipyards, and Belfast has become increasingly proud of that fact, and there's a huge economic development surrounding the Titanic Quarter, which is going to be a huge marketplace with shops and houses and exhibition space around the shipyards. But the Titanic, the shipyards are very important in Belfast because they also represent the height of Belfast's industrial power. And there's a great deal of nostalgia for those glory days, particularly among the Protestants of Belfast, because the shipyards were a Protestant organisation.
Well, yes, but primarily, it's not quite as simple as that. I mean, we've always been told this line that no Catholics worked there, but they did until the 20s or 30s. They got pushed out later.
Yes.
But when the Titanic was built, I think there were, didn't have more senior jobs,
right,
but there were plenty of Catholics involved in the building of it back then.
John, I know it sank, and that's what everybody remembers, but there's a great saying and joke around Belfast. It was working perfectly well when it left here.
Yeah,
it was the largest ship in the world built at the time. I understand the communal differences, but mm-hmm. it was a very proud situation. You know, there's a direct connection to Atlanta. Everything that was picked up on the bottom of the ocean when they found it on a debris field is stored in Atlanta. And it's shipped around the world 6 months at a time for shows. Mm-hmm. But it's literally stored here. Mm. So there's a real connection.
At a secret location. Well, that's funny that they say the boat was fine when it left here. They had a sister ship, which was fine for decades.
Sure.
It wasn't scuppered until the 40s or 50s.
The Olympia?
I think it was the Olympia, yeah.
And I'm sure it didn't have an ad saying built by the makers of the Titanic.
Probably not. In all fairness, they did go back and fix what were perceived to have been the flaws in the original to make it more safe.
What Geraldine pointed out, the Titanic Quarter Project, the entrance is literally 15 minutes from City Hall. So the economic impact of that very large project coming online, it's one of the largest commercial projects underway in Europe. In fact, I had the developers of the Titanic Quarter here, and we spent 3 days in and around the Atlantic Station project here in Atlanta, because it was built on a EPA disaster property. Sat there for years, and they had the same problems over in Belfast. And then they wanted to see a very large building, and in the middle of the quarter is going to be something called the Signature Building.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be where the museum will be and everything. And what they liked was our aquarium, so they sent over engineers and folks. And I got the aquarium and their engineers and the designers, TVS and Associates, to take them through all of the beams. We were crawling around the beams to see how do you put up a structure like that
mm-hmm.
that's cavernous in the middle,
right,
and not built like a normal building. So there's lots of Atlantic connections to.
It's also a great example of nothing succeeds like failure. You know that those that the Titanic, which is best known for the fact, you know, it took 3 years to build, but 2.5 hours to sink.
Right.
You know, but Belfast is happy to embrace that because it's this.
But it has taken a while because I remember 10 years ago, I knew some industrial archaeologists in Belfast who were among the people thinking this anniversary is coming up, 2012. Mm-hmm. We should be thinking of this, but they said it was actually very difficult to get support locally. Of course, an obvious reason would have been the Harland & Wolff shipyard had closed, right, finally, which led to much unemployment and ill feeling. And the people who were most closely associated with it weren't thinking in terms of tourism and so on.
Right. You know, but
they have come around.
Living in it already and working in,
right,
it. There's a university being built in the Titanic Quarter.
And the iconic Harland & Wolff crane is still one of the landmarks that you see from many parts of Belfast.
They're going to be there, and some of the biggest movies that we have right now, including the one on, it's called Thrones.
The King of Thrones.
It was filmed in Belfast, mm-hmm, in the paint room, which has 90-foot ceilings, so they can put these huge productions in there comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
So this HBO show was filmed 100% there. City Corp has just put a huge amount of folks in there. The New York Stock Exchange has their offices for Europe in the Titanic Quarter. So it's a tremendous boom for the economy there.
Well, I guess the hard opening is going to be next spring. 2012, we're going to be hearing a lot more about it because that will be the 100th anniversary of the actual maiden and sadly only and final sailing of the Titanic. Well, I want to thank both of my guests, Dr. Geraldine Higgins of Irish Studies of Emory and Jim Gaffey of the Gaffey Group, for coming down today and sharing all your views and experiences with us on three subjects, Queen Elizabeth II's visit to Ireland, President Barack Obama's visit to Ireland, and the Titanic.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
We're going to move on here with a piece of music which was learned at the University of Limerick by two Scottish ladies. It's of Irish extraction, but it's all about Alexander the Great.
Your mod is wild and free, and as the lonesome varies, you draw the heart from me. The reason my hair love slights me is because that I am poor, but I have what's allowed of me, and I can ask no more. She thinks she comes of a noble birth, me of a mean degree, but I am called of Adam Trace, my deed as well as thee. Don't place your mind on riches, love. Truth I will unfold. Her father has and gold. Oh, it's, don't you know that reason, this night that I was here, it was in order to obtain the love of you, my dear. Oh, it's, don't you know that reason, this night that I was here, it was in order to obtain the love of you, my dear. Oh, it's, don't you know that reason, this night that I was here, it was in order to obtain the love of you. Bedded twixt the neck and day, yestern I couldn't abide, for thinking as I lay, oh, the wind that lies outside. She what high when the day and year was cold, and knew the young year seems to me a warning nor the old. O Mecalect to me was gain to reach my bairns above. But heaven mech blast a method seen, and our feet went find the road. The wind cried free, the western air, like warlock tongues in strife. But the hand of fear hurts off the heart, and it's lost its care of life. I sat me lang upon the green, a stain through frae the car, and sign a lection dim between the shores of you and bark. 'Twas not the wildfire's flame that played along the kirkyard land, it was a band of bairns that gave away legs into their hand. Oh, white the camion baby thrang a silent o'er the sod, you could not hear their feet among the graves he safely trod. And nigh the canals flickered pale below the darkened sky, but the left was like a broken trail when the third we winged by. I know my broken heart was sad, I cried my in my due, for all the winds the left barns fair, but it went up on for you. For other babes the flame leaps bereft, and fair and broad appears, but I cannot keep my bonny left, for it's drooked away your tears. My ain, my dear, your leg shall burn, although my ain grow blind, although the twatter sod should turn away the tears that lie ahead. The sowing o' the spring tide buries a boon hard heed below sweet. There's nests among the kirkyard trees and gowans at her feet.
loons is loons the world round, but wrath is loons is buggers. The whiskey pipe got drilled one night and the hail tune gathered round. The pipe got drilled and the pots got filled and they all got full together. Now Major Grant was a decent soul and the toon folk loved him well. So why they did this terrible thing not one of them could tell. Oh, but whiskey flowing through a pipe suspended in mid-air was just a touch temptation more than some of them could bear. Loons is loons the world round, but wrath is loons is buggers. The whiskey pipe got drilled one night and the hail tune gathered round. The pipe got drilled and the pots got filled and they all got full together. Oh, some men dream o' a bottle of drams and some men dream o' still. But what could please a body more than an auger and a drill? For you'd never need to do any work and neither buy nor sell. Just enjoy the trickle and flow of your very own secret well. Loons is loons, the world round, but wrath is loons is buggers. The whiskey pipe got drilled one night and the hail tune gathered round. The pipe got drilled and the pots got filled and they all got full together. But the wrath is loons upset the Lord with their wicked sinful deeds. And retribution come to them all in the form o' aching heats. So they made a contract with the Lord to leave the pipe on Sunday. For a double dose the night before would see them through till Monday. Loons is loons the world round, but wrath is loons is buggers. The whiskey pipe got drilled one night, the hail tune gathered round. The pipe got drilled and the pots got filled and they all got foo, roaring foo. The air was blue, what a hullabaloo. Big galoots as pissed as newts, sucking it oot at Clarty Cloots, and they all got foo together.
Swanchet, shall nurse the lime mohul. The horic rojo in genioch, the fair secord is tune. Gent ich me good doy and ball at the hue all. The veil hull and down come hallig. Hushik me na munchen, rasha light. Von latches and dunya, which in kalek and Is bevnioch in si stu henrym hef a gudgerum et toka sues mochti vau ba hil tein al is vau i chymi nar nyn ar ym fasg eg a gari
chwysig bin a mynchen e rasha lai chwn a chas yn lwyr bych chi'n chwal eg a rai gelos lans yn a
Gen eich froch af y goch, y hwg mi at gor. Mo fi yn y noch fi malio rwyd, chan yr un can y smo. Chan eich mi synd o siach y tech o spesiad yr un fio. Yng glas eich wynio dy neidian.
Chos eich mi na mae'n tren yr asiad eich. Gwn na tres yn ymwneud, chi'n cael eich ar y nich.
Gallops lans yn asie, sorry as sanis, os y cain gael hyl y diau. O'r mwyn ach bawn ym henw, a chas yr am gestwl eich lom o chas chator i'n ffog y der mor rwam. Chi mi nesiw gwaset, gach lan as o jyfwam, mor megol na chai mi yw am brif yn y.
Ich bin am Menschen, der Rasche reit. Von Ratsches und Lügen, ich bin kommend gar reich. Der Lobs langs und Arsch hier, Sorge sei ich, was er kein Gag real der Tag.
Was er kein Gag real der Tag.
Song there in Scots Gaelic. That was called Cushig May, which means I walked, from the Gaelic word cuss, which is foot. And the album is called Cantharach, which means songs or singing. And it's all school children who've put out this album under the guidance of a summer camp, I think. But a very impressive album it is indeed. We started off with two from Jenna Leslie and Siobhan Miller. We heard the song Alexander and then a song called The Lost Licht. And that's from their album Shadows Tall, which is on Green Tracks Records. And in between, we heard from Ruster Robin Lang from his album Whiskey for Breakfast, his fourth album of all whiskey songs. And that one was called Loons is Loons, also available on Green Tracks. Time to go. Thanks again to our special guests. Thanks for listening. Follow us on the web. Follow us on Twitter. WRFG.org is where you'll find us in streaming audio. And at Twitter, it's the WRFG Celtic Show. We're going to leave you with a brand new one from Mr. Paul Brady. The album is called Hooba Dooba. And this song is One More Today. Take care, and we'll talk to you next week.
You make me smile as I lie here wrapped in you. Is there one wish to make all my dreams come true? Is there a gift you could give to me tonight, that when we wake would be the wonder of my life? I fall my knees, please, please, I pray. One more today, waking up inside your heart. One more today, with your kiss, the perfect start to a miracle of love that moves me more than words can say, now and forever. Now and forever. One more today. I close my eyes and the morning plays again. You wake me up, my lover and my friend. Deja vu. I know we've done this many times, but I could never take for granted that you're mine. I fall my knees, please, please, I pray. One more today, with your fingers in my hair. One more today, to hear your laughter in the air. A miracle of love that moves me words can say, now and forever. One more today. One more today. With your kiss, the perfect start to a miracle of love that moves me more than words can say, now and forever. Now and forever. One more today. One more today.